Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. My guest is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half an hour. Call those in to 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon. Good to talk to you as always.
Good afternoon.
And so let's start right out because we've got a lot of things on the docket today. I wanted to get to a question from a listener, Debbie, who had actually emailed us during the end of our last show, and we didn't have a chance to get to her question. So I want to start right away with Debbie's query, which is this. She says, why doesn't Crawfordsville install roundabouts? She says there are many locations that it would really help move traffic, she thinks.
Well, we currently have none, and I think you'll see that change over time. We just have not had any intersections that we've had to rework or redesign, if you will, in which we could implement those. So, you know, we've been working on the basics here, getting infrastructure replaced, and we're starting to really work on some of the transportation issues. And I think you'll see that really, you know, play out over the next few years. And maybe we'll see a roundabout or two in there. There are certainly some locations that seem to lend themselves to roundabouts, but we've just not quite gotten to that point yet.
How do you make that determination of whether an intersection is better for a standard diamond-shaped intersection, cross-shaped intersection, or a roundabout?
Well, you really have to rely on the analysis and the data from the traffic engineers and look at what's happening in that particular area or that intersection and, you know, what you think is going to happen in the future as far as growth in that particular, you know, area that's served by that intersection. So I think there's probably a lot that will go into that decision. It's also interesting to note that, you know, it will take, and I think West Lafayette and Lafayette probably gone through this already, but it will take some time for the community to embrace that concept as well. And I get by far more feedback from people saying, you know, whatever you do, we don't want roundabouts. So, you know, I mean, it's going to take a while to kind of get through that and for people to accept that idea and to get used to that. But, you know, it's something that's on the horizon.
In terms of taking the feedback from people who you said didn't seem very comfortable with roundabouts, it strikes me that that's the kind of thing that maybe people just don't have a lot of experience with them. And I know that here in West Lafayette, there was a lot of discomfort as the city installed a number of them in recent years. But I think it's something that people are becoming more and more used to. And certainly the data suggests that you can, as Debbie's question suggests, move a lot more traffic through them than you can through a typical intersection that's got a stoplight or a stop sign at it. So do you just need to get people to realize that, you know, hey, this actually is what the data suggests is better?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's a matter of laying the data out. And it's also, you know, like you said, it's giving people that time to, you know, they spend time driving in other communities and they experience these and they find out they're not as scary as they, you know, appear on the surface. And once they're used to it, it's not that big of a deal. So, you know, my point there is not that we should let that deter us, but my point is it's going to take some time to educate people and move through that process to get to where we need to be. But it's certainly something that's on the table as we look at some of these intersections and how we approach traffic flow and redesign some of these key areas within the city.
Let's move on to other things. Probably the biggest story involving your city in the last couple of weeks has been the motorcycle accident that has hospitalized State Rep Tim Brown. He's the head of the House Ways and Means Committee, as a lot of our listeners I'm sure will know. We've only gotten a couple of public reports that talk about his condition. We're told that he has improved slightly in the couple of weeks he's been in the hospital. I wondered what sort of information you're getting.
Well, what I'm hearing is largely the same as, you know, what the public's hearing, but in speaking with some people who have visited and maybe spent some time with the family, my understanding is that he is improving, and it's just going to be a long process of, you know, going through various surgeries, and, you know, that's not something that you recover from overnight. So, you know, when you have multiple things to take care of, multiple injuries, it's going to take a while. But my understanding is that he is well on his path to a recovery.
Representative Brown has served Crawfordsville in the legislature since 1994. I had not heard any whispers that he'd planned to step away. I still haven't heard anyone say definitively that's going to be the case. But I think we have to be honest with ourselves and say this is a very serious injury that might force talk of that at the very least. Have you heard any talk within the local Republican Party about whether that's going to need to happen and whether there are any possible replacements who are waiting in the wings?
I've not heard any discussion, you know, and I think it's too premature, too early for us to maybe kind of think along those lines. And you have to keep in mind that that particular district, all the districts are large districts, so it wouldn't just be a decision that would be up to people in Montgomery County. It's, you know, I think Boone County and some other counties involved in that as well. So we're not hearing that. Everybody's, you know, behind Dr. Brown and you know, hoping for a full recovery and doing whatever we can to support his family.
I don't mean to push back or seem cynical on this, and certainly everybody I've talked to and we here at WBAA are hoping for a recovery as well. But doesn't it seem prudent to think about this? We're about to start a budget session of the legislature. You're talking about the guy who's the head of the Ways and Means Committee, which is the key budget writing committee. And just to be frank about it, this is somebody who's been hospitalized for weeks. There's not been much communication about his condition. And I'm not a doctor, but what all that says to me is this is pretty serious. And I can't be the only one who's heard rumors about how bad the crash was. I'm not going to repeat what I've heard because I can't confirm them. But shouldn't there at least be a replacement plan and then just hope you never have to use it?
Well, undoubtedly, it's serious. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about that. You know, but as far as the budget process and what happens at the State House, I mean, even if we were to make a replacement, you know, with his seat, that person would not become the, you know, the chairman of the House Ways and Means by any stretch. So that's a process that I'm sure they are thinking through and working through with the leadership over there, you know, as we approach this budget process on the state level. You know, who's going to step up to the plate in his absence? And I have no doubt they're working through that. Whether or not we, you know, were to name a successor here, somebody to take that seat at some point, they would be starting as a freshman, and they would certainly not be in the position to, you know, lead the budget process on the state level.
No, you're absolutely right about that. But my point, and I think you understand, is that we're talking about someone who is going to be a phenomenally important lawmaker, potentially, if he's in office at the time of the budget writing session. And certainly that job as head of Ways and Means is probably second or third in terms of importance to the governor and the Speaker of the House in terms of how all of the lawmaking gets done in the next 5 months or so. Let me ask you a more general question. So Representative Brown has been in the General Assembly 24 years. Senator Boots, who's opposed in this year's election, will be in his fourth term in office. That would put him in there for 16 years. You've got a couple of relatively long-tenured folks at the State House. Certainly the area has benefited from that. But let me ask you, how does the next generation of public servants there stay ready for when there is an opening? Because it's a when, not an if.
That's a good question, and I think that's a question we've been asking ourselves, you know, at the local level and higher. You know, we are spending a lot of time trying to reach younger people and get them engaged in the process so that we start to build that pipeline, if you will, of our next, you know, our next generation of leaders. And it's very concerning, I think, not only to us in this community, but in most communities. There's a gap there. You know, when I make appointments to serve on boards and commissions, it's kind of the same list of names over and over, and we're constantly asking ourselves, how can we inject some new young blood into this, if you will, to get these people started in these basic roles to start getting experience that they might someday run for city council or mayor or state rep or senator or those kind of things. You have to start building that base at some point, and that has been a struggle, and it's not a struggle exclusive to one political persuasion or the other. We see it across the board on you know, every piece of the political spectrum. We have to find a better way to pull these younger people in, and I think we're on the verge. I think we're on the right path there. We have a long, long way to go, but you know, at least we're aware of the issue and we are starting to engage them in new ways. It's going to be pretty telling for me how how the Youth Council performs, and how we start to really incorporate younger people into the process. And I try to do it all the time, and it's quite frankly very difficult. The thought of finding someone, younger to run for one of these higher offices is pretty daunting, if you will, because they don't have the time to get the experience at the lower level to prepare themselves for that. And that's for a variety of reasons. Either they just don't have the time because of busy schedules, or they feel disengaged and they've not plugged into the process. So we have a lot of work to do there.
I think you're right that both parties realize that the bench needs to be built up a little bit. Let me ask you, though, do you think that some of the problem that has been had is that Indiana, as we've pointed out in a lot of stories, has a supermajority of one party and has for a number of years now in both houses of the Indiana legislature. It's no secret that your county is dominated by Republican politicians. Very few Democrats get elected. Do you think that being the way it is turning off young people who think, well, that's the way it is. It's the way it's been since I've been alive. Why would I try to fight such an uphill battle?
I don't know that it's so much of the partisan take on it as it is just that I can't make a difference. So why should I give my time, and why should I give up the other things I want to do to go participate in this process when I really can't make a difference? And that's certainly not the case. People absolutely can make a difference. The other thing that's interesting to note about that, and I hear this a lot from young people, we have attached an image of what it means to serve in public office that's not nice. And, we see that play out here on the local level. If you look in Montgomery County at politics in Montgomery County, you throw in the zoning issue, you throw in the wind farm issue, you throw in some of these things, and it becomes borderline pretty nasty at times. And most people just don't want to, they don't want to engage in that. They don't want to be drawn down that path. And it pushes people away. So I'm not sure that it's saying, hey, look, there are too many Republicans involved in this, and I'm not going to make a difference. It's just in general that view. And I always take exception when I hear people say, Montgomery County is heavily Republican, and it certainly is. But in the city of Crawfordsville, I don't think that divide is as big as it's sometimes made out to be. And I'm quick to point to the fact that I'm the first Republican mayor in quite some time. So, I don't think it's the partisan issue. I think it's many other things going on. But we have to fix the political discourse in this country, or you're not going to see people step up. People don't want to wade into that quagmire and be attacked, because of every decision they make.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Send your emails for him to ask@wbaa.org. Tweet questions at WBAA News on Twitter as well. We've talked several times this year about the city trying to hold some more weekend festivals as a way to draw people into the community and get you some outside investment. You're inaugurating an Oktoberfest this Saturday, even though it'll only be September 29th, but I guess we'll let that slide. Is it now a matter, do you think, of just trying to fill out the calendar with these types of events so that you spread them throughout the whole year?
It's largely a matter of listening to the public, and finding out what they really are wanting. And that calendar is kind of filling itself in. So it's not, I don't think it's a conscious decision to say, hey, we need something in late September, early October. It's more listening and sensing that they want, this kind of event or that kind of event. Our Main Street program has been largely responsible for much of that programming and has done a great job. And what you're seeing here with Oktoberfest is just a result of that evolving process in our downtown. There are more opportunities and there are more things to do, and that kind of stimulates this ripple effect. So it's a great move in the right direction, and I think you're going to see more of this happen, especially next year once Pike Place is online and some of those things are up and running. Pike Place offers unlimited opportunities to have these gatherings, if you will, these events in our downtown, and we expect to see that heavily utilized. So just a step in that process, and I think we're going to see more of it.
Let me ask you a couple of questions that have come in to our email address from Paul. They're unrelated to each other, but both interesting. First off, he says, recently another company has decided to have a go at the Ben-Hur building in downtown Crawfordsville. You and I talked about that a month or two ago. He wants to know more about the company, what their plans are, and especially wants to know how confident you are that this company, unlike the previous investors, will see a project through to completion.
Well, the name of the company is Anderson Partners, and they have a strong track record in Indiana of doing these kinds of projects. And the plan as it exists right now is to have a restaurant slash bar on the first floor, hotel space in those upper floors, and then possibly, and this is not certainly a done deal, but possibly some apartments on that top floor that would be market rate. So they would really target, you know, maybe visiting professors at Wabash, that kind of market. That is the planned use. He is working through the business side of that right now. There's a lot happening behind the scenes. There is still a gap in the project. I mean, that's just the realistic approach. But it's not certainly not insurmountable, and it's something that we can work through. So we will be having a series of meetings and discussions with the developer to identify ways to close that gap, and I'm absolutely confident we can make that happen. As far as my confidence with this developer versus previous developers, my level of confidence is very high in this case, based on his history of moving these projects. You know, the side note is that this is really the developer that I wanted to begin with, and things kind of got twisted and moved around behind the scenes, and he didn't end up with the project the first time. So I'm where I want to be. I have the people in place that I am confident can make this happen and move it forward. You know, and he just acquired it in the last few months. It's going to take a little time to get things ironed out behind the scenes, and then once it starts, it takes off. And, you know, when I hear, you know, well, I'm not sure you can make this happen, you know, I point to the old hospital, for example, and some of those projects and say, you know, those were more challenging than this one. We got those done, and we will get this one done. So we're going to get there.
Paul's other question says, in light of WBAA's ongoing reporting on East Chicago, has the city looked into Indiana Water's infrastructure in Crawfordsville? Do they use lead pipes? And if so, what's the plan to replace them with safe alternatives?
We're just beginning to scratch the surface on that, and we've started that reach out, that discussion with Indiana American Water as far as you know, what kind of pipe they have in place and things here. So right now, the answer is we have not spent much time and effort on that. We've relied very heavily on them and their reporting, but it is a discussion that we're beginning to have and really diving into their reports that they turn back to us to see what that infrastructure looks like in our particular community.
Do you have any sort of deadline that you're hoping to have all of that information in your possession?
Well, I think over the course of the next few months and through the winter, I think we'll have enough data to be, you know, very confident in what we see one way or the other. But, you know, I do know that Indiana American Water has spent a significant amount upgrading the infrastructure in our community over the last few years. So you would just have to take a look at it and see what it shows.
Paul, thanks so much for your questions. If you'd like to ask a question of Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton on our Ask the Mayor program today, email that to ask@wbaa.org. Another issue we've mentioned a number of times on the show is the county's participation in the Wabash Heartland Innovation Network, sometimes called WIN. You have expressed some skepticism on multiple occasions that Crawfordsville would get much benefit from the group. I wanted to get your impressions, though, from a presentation that was made about WIN by a Purdue professor earlier this month. Are you any less skeptical after that?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have a reaction to that presentation because I didn't get to attend. So, you know, we didn't have a lot of notice on that particular date and time, and I already had a conflict in place. So I really can't react to what was presented here one way or the other. Again, I will go back to what I said all along, and that is I'm cautiously optimistic. I hope this all works out, and I hope they're able to do all these things. I've asked the very basic questions and still have yet to this day received an answer, and that is, I want to see how what they're trying to do achieves the ultimate stated goal, which is to improve regional prosperity. And in order to do that, I want to know how you're going to measure. What, you know, where are you trying to move the needle? Is it median income? Is it, show me how we're going to measure success. And to this day, no one can define what needles we're trying to move. So, you know, until I see a concrete plan that looks funded, that's going to make things happen, I'm just stuck in a situation where, you know, if the things that I've attended in the past have been all over the board. I mean, there have been presentations on everything from A to Z. And, you know, I'm not going to get behind something that builds up a lot of hype and then doesn't deliver, because that's going to come back on me. And I've been very cautious with Stellar and very cautious with these things to not come in and overpromise something that is not going to be delivered. And I'm very cautious in this case to not do that and create this image that there's just millions of dollars and we're going to be able to do all these amazing things if I don't see that there's a plan in place to actually make it happen. So cautiously optimistic. You know, hopefully I know they have a new leader on board, and hopefully they get things moving in the right direction and they start handing us some real concrete stuff that we can work with and not just the sales pitch stuff that's kind of glossy on the surface.
You are not the only person who has said that you thought the lion's share of the benefit from this collaboration might be reaped by Purdue, which is charged with administering the nearly $40 million that the Lilly Endowment gave to start the thing. Do you think Purdue kind of oversold the roles that the communities would play and underplayed its own role?
Well, I'm not sure what they presented to the Lilly folks. I guess I can't speak to that.
I mean, the presentations, you know, that were made to you, the mayors, in terms of asking you to help buy into this and sell it to your constituents.
Well, I feel like we were brought in very, very late in the process. I mean, this is not something that we were involved in, you know, on the front side. I mean, we were aware of it, and there were some presentations, and we asked for representation from the surrounding counties to be involved in that process, and we were given, you know, a spot from Montgomery County. We have somebody very qualified serving in that role, but I'm not sure at the end of the day. You know, like I said, these presentations have been kind of all over the board, and when you go and sit in and you just listen on the surface, you think, wow, okay, this is great. But then when you stop and analyze it and really try to think through it, the dots don't connect to me. And that's where I struggle, and I don't want to sell my community on that. But, you know, as far as Purdue's role, obviously they have a key pivotal role here. But I'm not sure if this is designed, it goes back to the basic question, what is the goal here to improve regional prosperity? Every one of these projects they talk about either are unrealistic in being able to be funded, or they go to benefit, for my case, strictly Purdue. So it's kind of hard to parse that out. And we've had the candid one-on-one conversations with, you know, with the leadership involved in this, and they've thrown out numbers, and we've seen those numbers. How many of these dollars are going to Purdue, and how many are going to the surrounding communities? And when you look at those numbers, that tells me that it's pretty easy to overpromise and underdeliver to Montgomery County or Fountain County or whatever the case may be.
On to other things having to do with business development. One of the cornerstones of your Stellar grant proposal from some years ago, Fusion 54, is now open to the public. I'm curious what sort of interest you've seen from people who might want to spend time there in one fashion or another.
Well, Fusion 54 has turned out actually phenomenal. We are really pleased with the project. You know, and you have to keep in mind that that was Plan B. Plan A was to build a new building, and a few years ago we scrapped that and started over. And Plan B actually turned out, I think, better than what Plan A would have been. So the project is phenomenal. Our partners are in there working right now. That relationship is going very, very well. The co-working space is up and running. We're selling memberships and getting a lot of interest already. The accelerator offices involved in that co-working space are already all rented with a waiting list. So we predicted that the response would be very strong in this community, and that's exactly what we're seeing. You know, when I spoke at the ribbon cutting, you know, I pointed out, you know, the fact that we were cutting the ribbon that day, but we'd already held 22 events in that building prior to the ribbon cutting. And that just shows the interest and demand that's there for what's happening in that building. And it's been absolutely nonstop since the ribbon cutting. I've been there all morning in two different functions in that building already today.
It seems like kind of a rubber meets the road moment for this whole space, especially the co-working aspect of it, because you either have to have the space so that people can innovate, but there's a question about how many you have who are fully ready to have that mindset of going out and trying to use a co-working space for that, or you can't draw people in because you didn't have the co-working space. And so now that you've got it, it seems like Crawfordsville is either going to have to prove that its citizens are about innovation and creativity and co-working for the purposes of going forward, or that space is going to tell the story of underuse and the fact that you have more to do in terms of getting the citizenry involved in that sort of economic development, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this is the point where, you know, everything we've talked about, the proof is in the pudding, and it either happens or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, we all have to step back and reevaluate for sure. But, you know, you have to think in terms of the basics, and there are so many people in our community who work from home, and they want a place to go and start to work. So, you know, it's not just people starting a business. It's people who already have a business, who need the environment to work in, and then at least maintain them, and maybe what they do will grow to the next level. So it's a combination of all those things. And like I said, the demand already is very promising. I wish I had another floor to put accelerator offices in. And by accelerator offices, I mean, you know, it's a single office that this beginning new business can rent at a very affordable rate for up to a year to get them started and nurture them and move them along until they're ready to, you know, accelerate out into the community and go to the next level. The thing that's totally different about our co-working, and no one else has done this, is that we've combined it with our economic development team. That's very unique.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. Unfortunately, we've run out of
the time
for the show today, but we'll do it again next month.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these shows archived at our website, WBAA.org. And you can listen at this time next week for our conversation with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.
Hi, this is WBAA News Director Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks so much for all of you who are our regular Ask the Mayor listeners. It's our privilege to bring you programming like this every single week. We think it's a valuable addition to WBAA's programming schedule, and hopefully it gives you a sense of some of the things that are going on not just in your community, but indeed in the communities around you as well. We always tell people that if there's something that's going on where you live, there's a reasonable chance that there's an analog somewhere else around here. And that's exactly the kind of programming that we hope you will choose to support as we get to the end of our fall membership campaign here on WBAA. You can go to WBAA.org and you can make a pledge of support. Tell them you like to listen to Ask the Mayor. Maybe you're a podcaster who listens to it on your way to or from work or while you're on the treadmill at the gym. Or maybe you tune in every week, and some of you, and there are many of you who do this, ask questions and send them to us at our email address, ask@wbaa.org. You can also call our telephone line, which is the same as the Ask the Mayor question line, 765-496-1999.